You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. Now it's time for the Art Journal Show. My name is Cora Zon, and in the studio, my very special guest is David Miller. And David Miller, there's a new exhibition opening. It's called Another World. It's at Yarra in Hillsville. Tell us about it.
It's very exciting, Cora. It's for me, it's very exciting. I hope for others too. It's an exhibition, just two artists. We've been having artists from out of the Yarra Valley combined with artists from within the valley, and this time it's about illustration, children's books illustration, and the incredibly famous Sean Tan will have his work there, and alongside on the other wall will be some of mine, 50 of them actually.
50 of yours?
Yeah, 50 paper sculptures in white boxes with bits of glass on the front so you can't touch them.
They look fantastic.
Yeah, I've never seen them like this before. There's nowhere that I've been able to put them all on the, well, it's not all of them, it's about a quarter, but put a whole lot of them on the wall and just look at them and say, that's what it all looks like. That's a whole bunch of work there.
It's like, it's a retrospective.
It is retro. Well, yeah, spective anyway.
Yeah. But it's so, they're like, it's kind of like a curiosity cabinet.
That's good. Yeah, I like that.
With all those sculptures.
All those boxes. The boxes that they used to have type in, the compositor's boxes with all the letters in it. So all these little boxes are different sizes and shapes and from different books have got different personalities, different colours and textures and stuff like that.
So they represent 16 books that you've illustrated, and some of them you've written.
Yeah, about 50-50. Yeah, 50-50. Books written by other authors and books written by me, which is a total surprise. It keeps surprising me that I've written books. I only ever thought of myself as a visual artist, but so putting words together is pretty good, really.
Very good. Yeah. Extraordinary. It's a dream of a number of people to write or illustrate a picture book, and you've made 16 of them.
Yeah, I'd love to go back and tell my English teachers. He can't spell, he can't do anything. Well, there you go, you can actually.
There you go.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible. So tell us a bit about the exhibition. You're exhibiting with Sean Tan. It's called Another World.
Another World, yeah. The world of the imagination of artists, I guess. The gallery's got on one wall, two walls, pieces from his book, Rules of Summer, which a whole lot of rules like don't leave a red sock on the clothesline.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that the gallery's been using to promote it. There's a clothesline with a little red sock on it in the illustration and a fence and two little boys cowering on one side of the fence and the other, this gigantic red rabbit. So the book's full of little rules that really don't make any sense.
It's so good. Wonderful. It's really quirky. I love the way he's got realistic, you know, like kind of urban landscapes combined with this imaginative aspect. It's quite a wonderful contrast. I really like the one, Don't Forget the Password.
Tell me about that one.
That one is like a child's, you know, like begging in front of someone who, you know, there's a building, a wall, it's all grey on the outside, and on the inside it's like this magical forest.
Yep.
Very colourful, and you desperately would love to go in there, but yeah, he's obviously forgotten the password.
I like the one that's Don't Eat the Last Olive, and there's two small boys, I guess they're brothers, and three large plates in front of them with one olive on it. But behind them, there's this huge crowd of monstrous birds, sort of vulture-y sort of things. And you can see that they've got their eye on that last olive. And if this little boy reaches in and touches it, he's gone.
Yeah. Don't step on a snail. That's the one with the tornado.
Yes. Yeah, they're good. They're beautiful.
It's so good. They're wonderful. They're wonderful. And it's wonderful, the two of you, picture book artists. It's a fabulous exhibition.
Our work's so different. Sean's is, in this case, large paintings. And mine are a lot of smaller paper sculptures. And mine are 3D.
Oh, it's wonderful. I'm fortunate enough to have had a little sneak peek. Mm. And it's absolutely glorious. The exhibition.
So it's on at Yarra
Give us the address.
Which is a gallery in Healesville, in 252 Maroondah Highway in Healesville. So there's a pedestrian crossing in the middle of town.
The main street
in the Healesville? Main street, yep, the main street. And the gallery is upstairs, pretty much opposite the pedestrian crossing on the top side of the road.
Yes.
Climb those stairs, dodge the really scary crocodile at the top, check out the little baby crocodile over its eye, and then you're into the gallery and it's all there.
It's all there. It's wonderful. Mm. You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show. My name is Cora Zahn, and in the studio I have David Miller. We're talking about the exhibition Another World, which is held at Yarra. It opens tomorrow, and it's on for 2 months until February, so it's a nice long exhibition. Yarra is a new space in Healesville. Tell us a bit about it. You've been quite involved, haven't you, David?
Yeah, I've been having fun there. We started rearranging a space that had been, I don't know what its long story is, but it had been in its last work a picture framers. And before that, obviously, there's a lot of communication equipment in there. So it had been offices and stuff. So we decided we'd take a partitioning area out and rip up the old carpet and polish the floor, paint the black walls white. And in the process, the ceiling started coming down. So we said, OK, we'll take the ceiling down as well. Uh-oh, now there's a whole lot of air conditioning and stuff. We'll paint that black, change it a bit, and it's got this beautiful retro industrial look at the top. It's all dark and the white walls. Big sliding door windows at the front onto a balcony that looks out over the main street. So that's one side of the building, which is what is currently the gallery. The other side's got three rooms, a large one we call the studio, and workshops happen in there frequently. And the other two works in progress. One, the plan is that it'll be a audio-visual gallery, so you'll be able to see videos that people make. And the front room at the moment is planned to be an art gallery where we can have more exhibitions of works by the local artists, by Yarra Valley artists. But it's all run by, organised by Yarra Valley Arts, which is an organisation that's been in the valley for quite a long time, and it's sort of rebirthed in a way. It's always been good. It runs the Open Studios, which listeners would know about, and it's now got some finance so that we can set up this space and gallery.
It's a home. It's a home base now.
It's a home. That was the thing, yeah. We wanted to have somewhere. We wanted, and we needed to have somebody to organise it, so we've employed Andrew Chu to do it, yeah. So I've been involved in doing that, having a wonderful journey, meeting lots of wonderful people, spending time in the gallery. People come in and say hello, and you find out that they're actually an artist from around the corner that you didn't know about. Lots of people are joining. It's all good.
It's fantastic. Mm. It's fantastic. There's a really nice feeling in that gallery.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very professionally laid out, lit, managed gallery.
Beautifully lit.
Mm.
Mm. And there's more to come, and so much has happened in such a short space of time.
Yep. Just this time last year we were dreaming about it, and now it's all happened, yeah.
It's amazing. Mm. And you're exhibiting. Your exhibition opens tonight and it opens to the public tomorrow.
Yeah.
You'll be in on Saturday to talk to people.
I will, yes. My plan is to call in there. I don't know whether I'll be there all day, but I'll spend quite a bit of time there.
So there might be a surprise
hanging
visit.
Out. Yeah. Nothing planned, just hang out with whoever is manning the gallery at the time.
But during the exhibition, there'll be workshops as well.
There will. After Christmas, there'll be workshops for adults and for children. School holidays, we'll be doing kids stuff. So they can make paper sculptures. They can make some from my plans, or they can make their own.
I remember one of your early books, which was a paper sculpture book. I bought it, actually. It was
How to Make Paper Sculptures.
It was a long, long time ago. Because, like I said, you've done 16 picture books?
Yep. Yeah, 16.
And a number of other publications?
Yeah, other things. Yep. Other books, how to do things and how to tie knots and illustrations of
how to tie knots.
Yeah.
I always get, like, I can never remember how to tie a knot properly.
Ah, you need my book.
Of course. So with these paper sculptures, have you got some new ones that you'll get the kids to do, or will you use the plans in that book?
I'll use the plans. Oh, I have... yeah, I use the plans from that book.
It's really good.
It's been out of print for a long time, but yeah. So they're printed line drawings onto A4 sheets of paper.
Ready to cut out.
They just cut them out and fold them up, yeah.
And make lots of little animals?
Yeah, animals, robots, dinosaurs, birds, lots of things.
Well, the interesting thing is, like that step of just making some simple paper sculptures, it's kind of your journey as well. You'll see that in this exhibition, how you began with a more simple style of paper sculpture and then where it got to in the end.
Yeah, the first book was Bootlegoose by Mem Fox, and I was really feeling my way working out how to do it with that book.
I mean, they're fantastic, but it's interesting to see your progression.
Yeah, yeah. I figured out how to make stiff old paper look like fabric, and that was a bit of a thing. And then I thought, well, I can make it look like rock as well. And then skin of a dinosaur and so on, yeah.
And you just did some experiments with the paper to get those looks, or what happened? Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, so the process was I was making the clothing. It looked very puppet-like, board-like, like it's carved out a bit of wood, no wrinkles. And I got a piece of paper and scrunched it up. And if you do that, you just get sharp edges, and it still looks like scrunched-up paper. So I figured out if I wet it just a bit, and then I could scrunch it up and straighten it out lots of times till it was almost tearing, and then I could make that more, I could shape that how I want it to go.
Mm. What did you like, mist it with a little mister, or did you soak it?
Just a quick dip in some water.
Quick dip in some water. Mm. With these techniques that you learnt over a period of time, did you source ideas or did you just make them up, or how did you get some? I know
The hot glue gun was my daughter's suggestion, bless her heart. Thank you, Serafina. But the others, yeah, just figuring it out, problem solving, working it as I go. Yeah, that's the way it happens.
Mm. Well, you were saying there's not really, like I said earlier, that creating a picture book is a dream of many writers and artists. But you're saying that, you know, well, at the end of the day, it's like building a house. It's a very practical exercise.
Yeah, it is. It is. So a picture book starts with the words.
Usually?
Always. I don't know if the idea might come visually, but the concept is words almost always.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so So the words first, and then you need to fit those words into 32 pages, because that's the structure of a picture book. Sean's go a lot longer, so then it's strictly not picture books, but the standard picture book's 32 pages. Take one out for the title page and imprint and stuff like that, and you end up with 30 pages. So the story needs to fit into that. That gives you a structure. Then, so that could be written by an author or the author illustrator. Then the illustrator divides those ideas up into the pages and then works out what the illustrations will look like. Mostly people do storyboards and then a dummy. So a dummy's rough. Some of them are very beautiful. Some of them are pretty basic. And then from that you then construct your drawings or your, in my case, sculptures.
So for the ones that, we'll talk about, because you've gone about it in both ways. You've received the words,
yep,
and you've also written the words. So perhaps let's start with the ones that you received. The very first book you illustrated was by Mem Fox.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Ooh.
Yeah.
A dream.
A dream I never, dared to dream, I guess, really.
Tell us about that process. How did it happen?
Well, I had done the book we were talking about before about how to make paper sculptures. And the publisher for Mem Fox, Belinda Bolliger at Hotter Headline, had seen that book and through a literary agent asked me to do a paper sculpture that illustrated an animal. I think they wanted to see one in colour. I'd only done black and white. So I sent that to the agent, who sent it to Belinda, who sent it to Mem's agent, but I didn't know it was Mem. And then to Mem, and Mem said, okay, it's a bit like the, I don't know, it's a long story. And then the... So eventually Mem said, yeah, that's good. which filtered back along this long chain of people. And I said, I'll do it. And they then sent me the script, and it came out on my fax machine, Memfox Boot or Goose, and I just did a jump around the place and said how wonderful this is. And it didn't matter whether it was Mem's best book or worst. It didn't matter at all. It was my big chance.
It's huge.
It was this huge step. So,
Maybe you should explain why it was so big.
Well, Mem now and then was I guess probably more then was Australia's leading children's author, and very much loved doing some beautiful books. Possum Magic, I mean,
classic.
Absolutely. So to be able to do that meant that people were going to buy the book. Whoever illustrated it was going to be, Mem's Fox was going to make it work. And on the cover, it's got Mem Fox really big and David Miller.
But, you know, that's what they always did in the picture book world, didn't they? They might team up a famous illustrator with a new author,
yep,
or vice versa.
Yep, that's right. And so then having done that one, Belinda then said to me, let's do some, we want to do more books with you. You write it. And that's when I thought, oh, my goodness, I can do that.
But let's talk about the process. So you got the words from, yep, Mem Fox, comes out on your fax machine.
Yep.
What do you do? What do you do with it? I mean,
I start drawing.
You start drawing. But I mean, so you just read it and your emotions settle down.
Yeah, and it was, there are things like I dance with a pig in a shiny green wig, but I wouldn't say goo to a boose, and I take a long walk from here to New York, but I wouldn't say boo to a goose. So they're very visual things. There were lots of eating yucky stuff things in it and playing with snakes. There were sort of dangerous, naughty things that a child would or might not think of doing, none of which were scary. Actually, as saying boo to a goose is the basic plot of it. So she gave me lots of different things. Yeah, it was a good book to start with.
Very
lots of
good
visual ideas.
And when you did the drawings, did you then have to have them approved, or did they give you free rein?
I was given incredibly free rein. My later experience with other publishers is that I was just given so much freedom. And I didn't really understand the process properly because I'd never done it before. Nobody had taught me. So the process of making a book was, I was sort of feeling my way. And I could rearrange the order of it even.
With the writing?
Yeah. Mem didn't really care if I swapped pages around. It didn't matter. It wasn't sequential. It didn't matter. So
every page stood?
Each one stands on its own, yeah. And there was one that she had. I'd gobble raw kidney on beaches near Sydney. And I'd eat all the snails in smelly grey pails. So there's lots of eating yucky stuff. And I actually had the temerity to sort of say through my agent, blah, 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 there's too much yucky stuff in here, Mem. And so she took one out and turned it into a walk on my knees past a hive full of bees, which sort of paid me back because I then couldn't figure out how to illustrate that. Yeah, it was fun. It's still on sale. It still sells. It's a really good book.
Well, I guess that's why I wanted you to explain how important it was to have Mem Fox as, you know, the first. Yeah, it was huge. Yeah. I mean, she's written classic books, and you are part of that.
It's great.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show. My very special guest today is David Miller. We're talking about the exhibition that opens tomorrow called Another World, and it's at Yarva in Healesville. David, this exhibition features you and Sean Tan, two famous children's book illustrators, two famous Australian picture book illustrators. And we were talking earlier about how you may illustrate the words that an author has written, or you may illustrate the words that you have written, and you have done half-half in the 16 books that you've had published. So let's talk a little bit more about the ones that you've illustrated of your own writing.
The process. Well, the first, when Belinda said, write one, I thought, what's the most important question? What's for lunch is pretty big. So I'll write a book about what's for lunch, but what animals eat. And so that was the beginning of that one. Then I went on to doing others. And have you ever looked up in the sky and seen swifts just circling above? They come through, spring, I think. Usually following or around thunderclouds, and they live in the air, and it fascinates me that there are animals that live on this earth, the same space that we live, but whose world is totally different. Swifts would know nothing about gum nuts and grass and stuff because they're in the air all the time, like dolphins are in the sea. So it was a book about how there's parallels between human experience and animal experience, which sounds really heavy, but it's just a simple little children's book. So that's sort of the beginning of ideas. A few years ago, there was a Tampa refugee boat thing, and I got really angry about that, about the way that refugees were being treated, and I wanted to make a contribution to that. So that was the beginning of a story, just anger, really, and a need to do something. So I wrote a book called Refugees. It's about ducks. And so it's also, and the ducks have to find somewhere else to live when their swamp's filled in. And so that's another book. There's a few of those in the pile of artwork at Yarva. And so that's a book that I'm really proud of. It's still selling really well, and it's used in schools by teachers to talk about the state of a refugee. But it's also about animal and conservation in general.
Mm. So why did you pick ducks?
Why did I pick ducks? The first animal I picked for it were little field mice. And the little field... So this is in my head and in little drawings as I begin to think about how it would work. And I guess I'm now telling you something contrary to what I said before about the words come first. Because in this case, I'm thinking what it would look like and how these things would be. So they're little mice, and they build a nest, and then a big combine harvester came along and mowed their field, and they had to find somewhere else to live. But I realised then that they couldn't go far enough, fast enough, so they had to have wings.
Mm.
And then it became ducks, and then I found bluebill ducks, which need a very specific location. So it's sort of analysing the situation, working out what's going to work best.
Well, I guess with, the mice... Yeah, where they, you're probably thinking about scenes, different scenes.
Yes.
Whereas a mice, once their home's been destroyed, they're going to go to another paddock.
They're going to be in grass.
They're going to be still in grass.
Yep.
So visually this developed, which is interesting that it is a contradiction to what you were saying.
There you go. That's right.
Well, it just goes to show that really you can approach your room different sides,
You can. So that's right.
Yeah. So then, and the specific location of this particular duck, is that what? Did you do some research on different ducks?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I checked out ducks.
So you thought ducks. Birds. But why ducks? I mean, it could have been any species.
Could have been any species, yeah. I'm not sure why I came in on ducks, but the bluebill ducks need clear, deep water to feed. And so muddy puddles and the farmer's dam wasn't going to work. A river and the sea weren't going to work, so that sort of gave me a structure that they were needing to find specific.
So almost having to they're looking yeah. for something that's yeah. suitable.
Yeah.
They're seeing something that's
almost
water,
yeah,
but not quite
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And in the story, the seagulls chase them away, which is like a country saying, "We don't want you here, not us." They shelter in a shooting gallery where, the shooting gallery where the ducks go past, and you have a little gun and you shoot it and it falls down. So the two little ducks sleep there, which is look like it was safe. They look like other ducks. I was at a school. In the suburbs of Melbourne years ago with that book, and a young girl came up to me and said, "That's how I felt." She was of Asian or African origin, and she said, "When I came here, I couldn't talk to anybody because they looked the same, but no one could talk to me. I felt like those little ducks." I thought, "Wow, got it."
Well, that's part of the magic of this, isn't it? Those kind of experiences.
They're the moments that are so
They're good. The moments. Mm. They're the moments you cherish.
Yep.
There's a song here called Vincent. Tell us a bit about and why you've chosen this.
Oh, that's Vince. It's about Vincent van Gogh. And it just describes his style of painting, swirling cypresses and wild skies. It's just a beautiful visual thing. It's a song about a visual thing and about a tortured spirit too, I guess. Let's hear it.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. In the studio I have David Miller. David, one of the books that you talked about just previously was called Refugees, and that's on issues very important to you. But other books that you've written are also about important issues. Tell us about those.
I think it's important for children to be aware that it's all not just little cuddly toys and stuff. The world's out there and it might bite, and there's real things happening in it. So I wrote a book called Big and Me. It was after a suggestion by a doctor, a GP, who is in an area where there's quite a lot of single mother families and other stress in families. I guess that's happening everywhere. And she said, I see a lot of families where there's a mental illness in one of the adults in the family, parent or relative has a mental illness, and the children in the family have to deal with it. David, you should do a book about that. And I thought, wow, that's a really good idea for somebody else to do because it's too hard for me. And then I figured out how I could do it. And so I wrote a book called Big and Me. It tells the story of a really big machine, a big earth pipe moving, lying type thing that's too complicated to be possible, and a little bobcatty type thing that's big and small. It wasn't very hard to figure out their names. And big malfunctions in ways that indicate mental illness. So there's he does stuff there that suggests paranoia or all sorts of. You can interpret it the way you want, is the way I've made the book. And there are other characters in there. There's a boss who sort of who organises things. He's like a doctor or a specialist. There's the mechanic who's really a truck of tools, and mechanics like a doctor or perhaps the person next door who the child can trust and confide in. And it follows the journey, the relationship of these two. So it tells the story in a way that helps a small child understand that what's happening happens to others, they're not on their own, and that they can get help, and that they don't have to fix it. It's not their problem to fix.
In the picture books, you use ducks to represent people, you use machines to represent people. What is the importance of using this sort of type of metaphor, like not just using children? Because
I could have followed a journey of a human refugee, and that would have then been the journey from Somalia or Afghanistan or wherever to somewhere in particular. And I wanted to make it broader than that, so it could be any refugee under any circumstances, erupting volcano on island or war in neighbourhood, doesn't matter.
Or even deeper than that, I guess, a sense of alienation?
Yep. And with Big and Me, again, I didn't want to tell the story of an individual. I hope no parent has as many problems as Big has. So, and I wanted to make it a book that a child would read and just see about mates helping each other if they didn't live in that world. So a child who perhaps has got a parent who has rage, has anger management problems, then they would see that in the book. Whereas a child that doesn't have a parent with anger management problems wouldn't see it. They would just see this helping mates thing. So if I put it with real people, it would have been, you would be thinking it's just that boy or that girl, whereas it can be anybody now.
Mm. And that's the beauty of metaphor, isn't it? Mm. You can really look at it from many perspectives.
Yeah.
It really opens it up
for
discussion. And that's one of the things that you even said something about with refugees. is like a website with tools, because it's become a teacher's tool.
Yes. So if you were to Google a search for David Miller and refugees, you would find your way to that. And likewise, if you did it with Big and Me and David Miller, those two should get you to notes on the book, guidance on the book.
And these books are available in local libraries, so you could go down to the library, pick
They'll
up a
there.
Book.
They should be there.
You know, famous children's books.
Yes.
And so parents could look up this information. It's not just for teachers. Parents could have a look.
No, it's really for parents. Yeah.
Okay.
Grandparents or aunts and uncles. Maybe little Betty might benefit from reading this book. It might help. And opens discussion.
Opens discussion, yeah. And communication. It gives you a bit of a guideline, a bit of some prompts, things that you can think
absolutely.
About, things that you can talk about. It just extends that experience of reading a picture book.
So in doing Big and Me, I it's not my journey. I had wonderful parents, didn't have that problem at all. I had to find experts, and I found a lady called Rose Cuff, who is very knowledgeable, and she was able to point me, you need to talk about this, you need to talk about that.
So that helped the development of the
the
story the types of situations.
Yep.
Fantastic. And these sculptures, a few of these sculptures from this particular book, from all of these books,
can be found
in the exhibition at Yarva.
At Yarva.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. In the studio I have David Miller. We're talking about the exhibition that opens tonight and opens to the public tomorrow. It's called Another World. Yarva is a not-for-profit organisation that supports artists in the Yarra Valley. It's been a pleasure to have you come on the show today, David.
Absolute delight. Thank you for having me here.